I'm not yet going to answer the question, is that disobedience justified or not justified? First, I'm answering the question, is it disobedience or is it schism? Well, very clearly, it is disobedience. The church historically has always regarded that as a very serious disobedience, but it is only a disobedience. The church has never taught that the mere fact that you ordain a bishop makes you a schismatic. To be a formal schismatic, which cuts you off from the body of the church, you must declare yourself to be separated from the authority of the Pope. If you declare, the Pope is not my superior, he has no authority over me, if you say that, then you are indeed a schismatic. You're excommunicated. And another example would be, to reject entirely the jurisdiction of the Pope. For example, if I were a bishop, and I were to consecrate one of these men bishop, and the Pope were to say, no, you can't do that. And I say, well, Holy Father, I'm doing it anyways, and I were to ordain them a bishop, I would be gravely sinful, and I would be excommunicated, and I would be gravely disobedient, but I would not be a schismatic. However, if I were to tell the Holy Father, what I do is none of your business, you're not my superior, I'm going to ordain these men bishops, and I'm going to confer upon them the jurisdiction to govern dioceses, then I would be a schismatic if I were to do that. And this was explained by the Dean of Canon Law at the Catholic Institute of Paris. For a bishop to ordain another bishop and to presume to be able to confer jurisdiction on that bishop, that would be challenging the Pope's jurisdiction. That would truly be an act of schism. But Archbishop Lefebvre made it very, very clear that he had no intention of conferring any kind of jurisdiction. He made it very clear and very plain that it is to preserve the Society of St. Pius X, it is to preserve the traditional rites of the Mass and the administration of the sacraments, and that alone is the motivation why he thought it necessary to perform this act of disobedience, which was to consecrate bishops. Clearly, therefore, it does not involve any kind of schism. In fact, the bishops of the Society of St. Pius X rotate. There will be one bishop who is performing, confirmations in North America. In the following year, a different bishop will come in and perform the confirmations. And they do this as a public gesture to show that they have no pretense of exercising any kind of territorial jurisdiction. It's not as though there's one bishop who's in charge of North America and another bishop in charge of South America and another bishop having some kind of jurisdiction over Europe. They're making it very clear by rotating that none of these bishops is claiming any kind of jurisdiction. But they're only doing this out of default, because the local ordinaries have no intention of performing or even permitting the traditional ceremonies in the solemn administration of the sacraments and in the celebration of the Holy Mass. Therefore, their motivation is very clear. It is to preserve the traditional rights of the Church, and they make no pretense, no claim to jurisdiction. For that reason, the verdict to be made is very clear. They do not, according to Catholic teaching, they are not in schism. And if anyone tries to tell you that they are in schism, that one is in error. And when the local clergy and when the bishops are saying, if you go to their mass, you get excommunicated because they're in schism, well, those people are lying to you. They are the ones who are ignorant. And it's about time that the faithful be more informed about that, and they should know well that the clergy, in too many cases, are trying to put one over on them, trying to enforce their ignorance on the people. It is time that Catholic people be aware of the fact that this is a statement of their own malice and of their own ignorance. That, morally speaking, there is no objection to why a person may not attend the Mass celebrated by priests of the Society of St. Pius X. If I may have, I don't know if I've covered everything there. Was there another question? One final thing, that's what as far as disobedience, you've heard it said, the will of the bishop is the will of God, the will of the pope is the will of God, never disobey. Blind obedience? No. I give the example of Saint Athanasius. He disobeyed Pope Liberius, and Pope Liberius excommunicated him. Athanasius never repented for his disobedience, and yet he is a saint, a canonized saint and doctor of the Church, because there was a moral imperative for him to resist the Pope. The Pope was favoring the heretics. The heretics were giving out a profession of faith which was ambiguous, which was could be interpreted as to deny the divinity of the second person of the Blessed Trinity. A Christological heresy. I mean, that's to deny any dogma of the faith, of course, a person falls into heresy. But there is a hierarchy of dogmas. Some dogmas are greater and more sublime than others. And certainly, the divinity of the second person of the Blessed Trinity is one of the principal dogmas of our faith. And if the Pope should do something that would cast doubt upon the divinity of the second person of the Blessed Trinity, that is to subject the Catholic faith to a very grave danger. And the teaching of the Church is very clear that even the Pope is to be resisted in such an event. And when this ambiguous formula of the profession of faith was signed by Pope Liberius, for the sake of unity and peace in the Church, he didn't want anybody to be opposing it. Well, St. Athanasius opposed it very strenuously. And for his trouble, he was excommunicated. And it was not in spite of his disobedience, but because of the heroic virtue that he displayed in disobeying even the Pope. And the suffering he had to go through, I imagine, was very intense. You know how it feels to be an outcast, to be excommunicated? Well, ask Archbishop Lefebvre. I don't think he enjoyed it one bit. But what did he get for his trouble? St. Athanasius has the honors of the altar. He is a saint, and the Mass is celebrated in his honor because he had the courage to oppose even the Pope and to disobey in public, even the Pope. And because of that, he is a saint. He is a saint of the Catholic Church, and his feast is celebrated every year. So that proves, for one thing, that sometimes it is not only permissible, but sometimes it is necessary to disobey the Pope. And Pope Innocent III, in his book, De Consuetudine, says that if the Pope should depart from the universal customs of the Church, he is not to be followed. Now, the universal custom of the Church, of course, especially, is the Roman Rite of the Mass, which is popularly called the Tridentine Mass, and the solemn administration of the sacraments according to the traditional rites. These have been the universal custom of the Church for many centuries. And Pope Innocent III teaches that if the Pope departs from those universal customs, he is not to be followed. And therefore, it is not wrong to be disobedient to the Pope in such circumstances. There is a higher law, a higher obedience, which is, as St. Peter says, we must obey God rather than men. And in the profession of faith of Pope Pius IV, it is solemnly set forth that we must adhere to the received and approved ceremonies used in the solemn administration of the sacraments. What we mean by received, of course, is those rites and ceremonies that we have received from the church, that the bishops have received from their predecessors, and so on and so forth, from the fathers down through the ages. The received and approved ceremonies of the church are the traditional rites of the church. And therefore, the profession of faith says, solemnly declares that we must adhere to the traditional rites. Our faith demands this of us, and therefore, there is full justification and a moral imperative to follow the traditions and customs of the church and not to be led astray by modernist innovations. And this was further emphasized, for example, in the teaching of Francisco Suarez, recognized universally as the greatest theological mind in the history of the Jesuit order, contrary to the opinions of some modern Jesuits who would perhaps prefer Karl Rahner. But generally speaking, Suarez is considered to be the greatest theological mind ever produced by the Society of Jesus. And he explains that if the Pope should deviate from the universal customs of the church, that he would, and especially regarding the liturgy, the Pope would follow the schism. And therefore, it is not those who uphold tradition who follow the schism, but are those who depart from tradition who follow the schism. And this was also taught by one of the greatest Dominican theologians, Cardinal Juan Torquemada. And these are some of the great theological minds in the history of the church. Pope Innocent III, Torquemada, Suarez, who are saying that the Pope is not to be followed, the Pope falls into schism if he departs from the customs of the church. Therefore, it is clearly understood that we have the duty to adhere to tradition, and that means to disobey the bishops and disobey even the Pope. Well, the faith, our Catholic faith, requires this of us.
Well, you want to ask if it's valid now? Is that what you're asking? Well, I can give Father's voice a little bit of a rest on that. I'm sure he could do a better job of it, but the validity of the orders would not be in question whatever. Anyone who knows the sacramental theology is, for a valid sacrament, you need a valid minister with the intention of conferring the sacrament, in this case, the sacrament of orders, a valid matter, in this case, a baptized male, and to use the proper formula or the proper form to use the sacramental theology word. And so as long as the bishop, whoever he is, be he schismatic or be he orthodox, ordains a baptized male with the intention of conferring the sacrament, and for that matter the man with the intention of receiving the sacrament, he would be validly ordained. It would confer the sacrament. What Father has been dealing with up to now, with the whole question that was asked before, was the licentiousness or the legalness, whether it was licit for them to do this. I don't think anyone, any critic of the Society of St. Pius X or of Archbishop of Faith, has suggested that the orders conferred were not valid. And besides, that brings us to another question of the other bishop that was there. If for any reason the confirmation of the orders was not valid through Archbishop Lefebvre, just for instance, there was a second, a co-consecrator, and that is why the Church has co-consecrators when it comes to bishops. That is, that if for some reason the ordination of the one bishop doesn't work, it goes through one of the other co-consecrators as well. And as there was a co-consecrator at that consecration, Bishop DeCastro Mira, who you heard about earlier today, they would. So you can be morally certain with two co-consecrators, as well-known and as fine a theologians as they were. They knew what they were doing, and they had the power to confer it. They did confer the sacrament. And certainly from there, passing on the sacrament of the priesthood through a bishop consecrated by them would certainly confer the sacrament. Yes. Why didn't he go through the channels? I will leave that one to Father Paul. What's your question back here? Yes. Father, I let you. These are questions for yourself, since they're reading the questions you raised.
Could you repeat the question for me, please? That would be a merely apparent excommunication, because one of the first things required for a valid excommunication means is that the culprit must truly be guilty of the offense, and he must be guilty of having committed a grave sin.
So this lady had a question, Father.
Yes. He wanted to, but in his dealings with the Vatican, there was so much duplicity and so much deception, and the conditions that were being offered by the Vatican were such that he clearly perceived what appeared to be a trap. Because the Vatican was offering to ordain a bishop, but not someone of their choosing, not someone from their fraternity, but somebody from the outside. And if they had ordained that man a bishop, and then Archbishop Lefebvre were to die, then they would clearly be in a position to dictate to the society the terms upon which their men would be ordained. And if they didn't accept, they would refuse to ordain them. And then the Society of St. Pius X would have died because of lack of the possibility of having their men ordained to the priesthood. The Archbishop clearly saw the trap laid for him, and in order to avoid that, he ordained bishops from men from within his own order, men he could trust would not betray the order and follow the dictates of the Roman bureaucrats. Well, I'm not sure I can answer everything there, because there are some facts that I'm not really entirely aware of there that I would have to know to give a complete answer. This much I can say, that the Society of St. Peter is tolerated by Rome because it provides very good window dressing. They can say, here, we're allowing the Tridentine Mass. We're allowing if you want to become a priest and you want to go to the, you want to be traditional, we've got this society for you. What good does this do for the universal church? The answer is none whatever. Because if you have a few priests whose presence is barely tolerated, if they're allowed only to operate in one, say for example, in one diocese in Germany, under very restricted circumstances, they are really not accomplishing anything of any major consequence for the church. They are not providing the traditional rites of the Mass and the sacraments. They are not providing sound catechetical training for Catholic children. sound moral training for Catholic youth, sound teaching for the Catholic faithful from the pulpit. They aren't able to do any of this for the Universal Church because they are not allowed to operate in a diocese unless the local bishop will have them in. And therefore, what good is the Society of St. Peter presently? It's not able to do very much of anything. They have many great, wonderful intentions, but as we all know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Could I just explain that a little bit, because I don't want to have Father's remarks misunderstood also. I think that what he's trying to say, very simply, and Father can correct me, is that just because that there are good people, good priests in the Society of St. Peter, but because of the juridical limitations put on them, the good they intend to achieve cannot be achieved under those constrictions. He's not questioning either the validity or the intentions or the good work that they do in a limited way. What he's getting across is that what is needed is a resistance to the erosion of the Latin rite, the Tridentine rite. And to resist that, you have to be able to resist across diocesan lines, you have to be able to resist in any part of the world in order to achieve that. It is the liturgy. Why should there be a resistance? Because I would like Father Paul to explain to you that actually those who celebrate the modern Mass, the new Mass, are actually being disobedient. It's a very interesting argument that the new law, the new Mass, although it is promulgated legally, we're not allowed to use it legally. And anyone who says the new Mass is actually disobedient. Now, it's a rather complex argument, which I can't give you all the details. I'm not sure if Paul can remember them all here. Maybe he can. But they are published in the Fatima Crusader, issue 27 and 28, that anyone who attends the new Mass is actually being disobedient. And anyone who says the new Mass is actually disobedient. Now, you can have the book. It's allowed to be published. But you're not allowed to use it. That's the status of the law with regard to the new Mass. It's a very interesting argument, and one that has never been answered, although we've published it for about 3 or 4 years, actually more like 4 or 5. It was 89, it's 3 years now. But the purpose, why make a big deal over the Mass? Some people have the answer because they feel right in their heart. But I would like to point out that there's something else here. Doctrine is at stake. Now, you can spread heresy two ways. You can spread heresy by getting up and saying, woman can be ordained priest. That's a heresy, in case you don't know that. And if somebody says that, he's speaking heresy. Now, that's one way to spread heresy. But it's not the only way to spread heresy in the church. There's another way, which is much more subtle, and one that we've been subjected to for the last 25 years. It's called heteropraxis. What is praxis? Praxis is the Latin word for practice. Now, there are certain practices that give rise to a belief, give rise to a way of thinking. If, for example, you saw me go into the church, and all weekend long, I never genuflected. I never showed any respect for the Blessed Sacrament. Now, I never said once that the real presence was not there, but I carried on in such a way as to give you the impression I didn't believe in it. Now, if that were to go on for 5 months, or 5 years, or 15 years, after a while, as St. Benedict would tell us, most people are taught by way of example and not by way of words. And so the heresy would be implanted in your mind if my example was the only one you saw. You would get the impression that the real presence is not a doctrine of the Catholic Church because no respect is being shown towards it. And we might even bow to a statue, we might even genuflect before a statue, but make a positive point of not genuflecting before the Blessed Sacrament. The message would sink in after a while. And that is why it's important to hold on to tradition, not only because that it's more pious and because it helps us feel better towards God, and it certainly does do that, but because it's also a way of upholding Catholic faith. Because by having the wrong practices, or practices that give rise to a false impression, in the long run, it has the effect of eroding your Catholic faith. And that is why when we say that St. Robert Bellarmine speaks about resisting people, priests, bishops, cardinals, and even the Pope, it refers to the same thing that Father quotes about Suarez or quotes about other great theologians in the Church, that as Innocent, a Pope, mind you, tells us we must resist the Pope who does not follow tradition.